So yesterday we started the Mishnah Daf Chav Zayin Amud Aleph, and we got up to V'chol Haroy L'Yorsho. So after all the details about who's posliyedus and who are considered krovim, now the Mishnah gives us a sort of a general rule. I meant to say Omen Beis. Did I say Omen Aleph?
Yeah.
Omen Beis.
Okay.
That anyone who's royal Yorsho, he's in the lineage for the inheritance laws, he is considered a Karov. But if someone is not royal Yorsho, he's not on the list, so we're going to see about Krovei Ha'em, you know, through the mother, then Enom Nifsolim, they're not possible. Now, we have here a basic machlokas Rishonim about how to understand this Mishnah. And this Mishnah is called the Mishnah Rishonim because you're going to see later on that the Chachamim expanded Psuleidus, and that's going to be the Mishnah Achrona. But in the Mishnah Rishonim, which we're studying now, Rashi and the Ad Ramah are of the opinion that only Krovim Reuyim Lirash Nifsolim Lahoid Lekrovon. And therefore, Krovei Ha'av, only the relatives through the father, are Reuyim Liyorsho, and therefore Nifsolim Liedus. So let's say, for example, you have an uncle who is your mother's brother, and your mother's brother is not Roy Lirash, even though you're her nephew, but that's not Yerusha. And this is based on a Gemara Bava Basra, Perakei Shnochlin, Kuf Ches Amid Aleph, and therefore Ksherim Lohoidlo. So the uncle in this case, his maternal uncle, is allowed to testify he's kosher to testify on behalf of his nephew. Aval eno yochel lahoid leachi ha'em. But the nephew is posel lahoid, he cannot testify against his uncle. Why? Because he's roy liyorsho. Now what does that mean, he's roy liyorsho? Let's say his mother's brother died. So then the Yerusha goes to his children. But if he has no children, it goes to his siblings. And let's say he only has one sibling, he only has one sister. When that sister dies, then her son will inherit her. So the nephew can inherit his uncle, but the uncle cannot inherit his sister's son. So this would be a one-way, what they call here, chad sitri. In other words, there's only one direction, psul edus, only from the nephew to testify vis-a-vis his uncle, but the uncle would be kosher to testify vis-a-vis his nephew because he's not roy liyorsho. That's the shita of the Yad Ramah, and that's the shita. No, I'm sorry, that's the Shita of Rashi and the Yad Ramah. Fine. Now, the Yad Ramah writes the following. Gam ra'uyim leiresh machmas ishus psulim. According to the Mishnah Rishonah, which again, that's the Mishnah we're learning now, you could have Roy Liyorsho even machmas ishus. And he has a whole list of cases. I don't know if we're going to go through the whole list, but let's just mention one of these cases. He has Baal Achos Ha'em. So that means his aunt's husband, right? In other words, his mother's sister's husband. Why? Because in this case, there is Yerusha, or Baal Imo, or the husband, right? The husband of his mother, a stepfather, Chamiv, Giso. Okay, so again, these are cases where Reuyim Liresh Machmas Ishus. I'm sorry, so again, let me just reiterate so I don't get too confused here, because I feel like I'm learning Masechta Yevamos right here. So if you're talking about Re'uyim Lireish Machmas Ishus, then they're Pasul. And what that would mean, I mentioned the Achi Ha'em and the Baal Achos Ha'em. Oh, so again, Achi Ha'em would mean that the uncle could testify in a case where his sister's son, meaning his nephew, is on trial, because he cannot inherit his nephew. And Baal Imo would be a case also where he could testify, because there's no Yerusha. Okay, so we'll have to go through all the details, but let's just get the general rules. Now, what's the logic of the Mishnah? Why does the Mishnah feel that Misha Roy Liyorsho is Pasul Yedus? Says the Yad Ramah, Anu Choshashim Sheyoyed L'Tovaso, he's going to testify on his behalf. Why? Kidei Shehamomon Shel Krovo Sheosid Liyorsho, this money in the future is earmarked for his Yerusha, Yishar B'Yado, it should stay in that person's hand, because that person will be Morish, he'll bequeath all his possessions, so you want to be Yorishim. V'chein Bir Aran. Ulam Hikshal Svaras Rashi, the Ran, after explaining Rashi, raises the following objection. Im Nemar Imf, we're going to say the Tam Psul Korov. Is Mishum Chashash Nogea, because he has Negias, because he is one of the possible heirs. Is Madua Eno Neman Lahoid Lechovaso. If he wants to testify, Adarab, that he owes money, someone who's a Morish, a potential bequeather, then if he's testifying that he owes money, then in such a case there's no reason in the world that we should be choshish that he's lying. Lachain, therefore, the Ran offers another pshat. Shatam shel psul karov eino mishum nogea. When the Torah says that a karov can't testify in both directions, whether litovas, his relative, or lechovaso, has nothing to do with nogea, that he's got vested interest and we believe he might lie. But eino elam igzeres akosav, the Torah says that krovim cannot testify. And that's what you might call, again, he doesn't use this language, a psul aguf. Psul aguf means it's a technical psul and it's a category, and that's what the Torah said. Ulakach. So therefore the Ran concludes that if he's Roy Liyorsho, and therefore he's a Karov, Nifsal Gam Hatzad Shekinegdo. In other words, now we're going to say that the Roy Liyorsho goes in both directions, because the Roy Liyorsho is only a Shiurim, it's only a way of evaluating that they're Krovim. Once they're Krovim, they're Apostle. So it doesn't matter in which direction you're going. Lachain Bachi Imo Bechamov. Kevin Shuroy Lirosh Oso Areim Krovim Zelozer Veim Psulim Lahoyed Zelzer. And therefore it makes no difference whether he's testifying Litovaso or Lechovaso. So that's the sheet of the Ran. So again, just to summarize, we have two approaches to understand why Roy Liyorsho is possible. One is to say that sets up an Egiya because he wants to get the Yerusha, and the other is to say that sets up a Karov, and therefore the Xeris HaKosov.
So around the maternal uncle is also postulated.
Correct, because it goes both directions.
Okay.
Now he quotes the Ramban. The Ramban says that Lefia Mishnah Rishona, Enom Nifsolim El Krovim Mitzad Aviv, V'lachein Hatana Kosav Dodo Uben Dodo. So an uncle or a cousin, what we call Ben Dodo, Rak Elu Nifsolim. Notice it doesn't say Dodoso, right? In the feminine, it says Dodo in the masculine. Aval Krovim Mitzada Eim Kevan Shenim Yorshim Einom Nifsolim. So if you have a relative through your mother, then since it's not Roy Liyorsho, the Yerusha goes through the father, therefore he's Kosher Liyedus. V'chein HaKrovim Mitzad Ishto Einam nifsalim, kevan she'einam nechshavim ru'uyim lahorisho. Right, so let's say his mother's brother is not going to be morish because the Yerusha doesn't go through his mother. Ki afshi tochen, even though it is possible that if the brother has no other Yerushim other than his sister, she will inherit her brother. The Kabbal nechosayim kishemesu, but ena Yorish osa, he's not really inheriting them. Really, it's his mother who's inheriting, meaning it's only a direct, it's an indirect kind of Yerusha. In other words, sometimes you could have a Yerusha that passes through the hands of a woman through an aim, but that's only an indirect kind of Yerusha. It's not that you have any connection to that relative of your mother in laws of Yerusha. Masha'enki bidodo, but if it's a dodo through his father, then that's a direct Yerusha. Okay, now the Mishnah goes on and says, "V'chol akarav lo bi'osa shah." What happens in a case where his relative by marriage saw the testimony and then subsequent to the actual maisa, to the story that took place, they were divorced, or his wife died, or whatever the case may be, but it turns out that at the time of the Haggadah, they were not related at all. So that's called Karov v'Nisrachek. And the Mishnah is saying, even though he's a Karov v'Nisrachek, even though the relationship terminated before the Haggadah, nevertheless, it's Karov Lobos Asho. Since they were relatives at the time of the Re'iyas HaEdus, that automatically passes now. Now you could have the opposite situation, which is also the case, that let's say they weren't related at the time of the Re'iyah, but there was a Chasid afterwards, and they became related by the time of the Haggadah. That's also possible. And the Osa Shah here refers to either the Shah of Re'iyah Seydus or the Shah of Haggadah Seydus. Either one of those two Shahs would possibly aid them with Torah's Krovim. Now, Hoya Korov Vinistrachi, but what happens if they were relatives, but before the Re'iyah, before time T1, they were Nisrachik? Kigon, for example, Chasono. Chasono means that he's related to someone, Machmas Ishto.
Son-in-law,
right? A son-in-law. And then what happened? Just 1 second. Okay. And then Mesa Ishto, and then his wife died before the Re'iyah Sarezek Kosher. So in other words, as long as they were Rechokim at the time of the Re'iyah, then there's no Psul Kurva. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Afilu Mesa Bito V'yeshlo banami menu arei ze karov. In other words, if he has children from his daughter, those are his grandchildren, then even though they are related to him through his daughter, nevertheless it's considered that they're directly related to him, so that even if his daughter dies, then they're still posuliatus. Okay. Interesting, he has a note here in the name of the Me'iri that the Me'iri says that ein halacha kirav Yehuda, but nevertheless he says mikomakom in roa dayan shu mechazer v'edu zu achar to'eles b'nei beso yishes adin v'lo yachriyabo. In other words, he should try to avoid relying on Rabbi Yehuda if he can. And Yishas Adin, maybe he'll delay the din, and he shouldn't decide based on Rabbi Yehuda. Ha'oe v'asone. Oh, this is complicated. So now we're talking about a very special relationship between two people, and the question is one allowed to testify on behalf of the other, or sone? Either it's an oev or a sone. And now the Mishnah tells me, how do you define an oev? How do you define a sone? Give me some sort of barometer. Oev ze shoshvino. It means when he got married, we call it, I guess, the best man or whatever you want to call it. And for the girls, they call it a bridesmaid. You know, that kind of shoshvino, who takes care of organizing the wedding. Or perhaps zivugam. Okay, now Rashi mentions the word zivugam, not here but elsewhere. And the question is, what does Rashi mean by zivugo? Maybe it means a shadchan, I don't know. But anyway, there's something called shushvinon. So in such a case, he's called an oev. So Rashi points out that he's only called an oev during the Yemei Chuppah, during the 7 days after the Chuppah. But after those 7 days pass, and it's no longer Yemei Chuppah, so then there's no longer a psul of oev. So that's something that we have to discuss as we go through the sugyas. Sone is kosher diba imo shloshi yom v'eva. They had some sort of a fallout, and as a result, they haven't spoken to each other for 3 days consecutively. That's called sinah. Interesting. You and I would say that that's just a passing thing, but the Mishnah says no. That's already enough to establish a sone. Now the Yad Ramah writes that where is this shear of Shlosh Yomim coming from? So he says it's coming from a pasuk in Dvarim Perek Yutes. It says Vahulo sonelo mitmol shilshom. Mitmol means 2 days ago, and shilshom means 3 days ago. And the Yad Ramah says that this is a statement of Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, the Oev and the Sone is a hemshech of what we saw early in the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda holds that an Oev and a Sone are psulim lahayid. However, the Chacham disagree, Amru lo, lo nechshedu Yisrael al kach. We're not choshesh, a Jew, that he would perjure himself and lie in Bezdin on the testimony for the sake of Avo Sinah. And therefore, every Oev and every Sone is kosher lahayit. Now, comes along Rashi, you'll see this Dira Maskel Lo, and he differentiates between Edus and Din. And he says the following. As far as Edus is concerned, it's all an issue of, is he lying or is he telling the truth? And we believe, that's the Chachamim, we have trust and faith in man, that he's not going to falsify or tell the truth. But as far as judgment is concerned, to sit as a Dayan Laduno, and it's his best friend, or his worst enemy, so there it's very hard for the judge to be totally objective, and therefore he's Pasul Ladun. And let me offer you the language of the Yad Ramah. Hachiluk bein edus ledinu shebe edus hi sipra maisa kefi shahoya. Ve'enonu chashdu bo shemachmas avo sino yishana mimenu. He's going to falsify the truth. He's just going to tell you objectively what he saw. Masha enkin bedin she'eno dover muchlat. Here it's not objective, but you really have to weigh the evidence and, you know, the very new, very sensitive nuances and gray areas, and you have to come to some sort of decision. And therefore, in the process of investigating and contemplating whether he's guilty or innocent, yesh lachshav shemachmas avoso sinos, he won't be able to be completely objective. V'yeh libo note liyechem min atzdodin. He has an inclination towards one of the two. V'afilim tia kavanos lahotzias adin lamito, even though he has every positive intention of emes, nevertheless lo yuchal liros es emes. It's hard for him to see the objective truth. Lezakos es hasone olachayev es oavo. Okay, so as far as Edus is concerned, we have a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim as to whether that is a psul Edus called ava oev or sina or sone. But with regard to Dayanus, everybody agrees that an oev and a sone, you're not allowed to serve as a judge. Now let's go back to the psul of krovim. Where is the basis in the Torah for a psul of krovim? And this makes a lot of sense according to the Ran. If you remember, the Ran was assuming that Kurva is a psula guf. We called it Gzeres HaKosuv. Where is that Gzeres HaKosuv? If you hold like Rashi and the Adrama that is a chashash sheker, then that might be something that we would understand intuitively. Maybe we wouldn't ask Minani Mili. You know, Krovim have a certain tendency to see the bad in the. I mean, sorry, to see the good in one another, right? Minani Mili, the Tana Rabbanu we learned in a Braisa. There's a pasuk in Kitate say Lo Yumsu Avos Al Banim Ubanim Lo Yumsal Avos. My Talmud Lomer, what is this pasuk coming to teach me? Im Lelamit Shelo Yumsu Avos Bavon Banim. If it means that the fathers should not die because of the sins of their sons, and therefore when it says Ubanim Lo Yumsal Avos, it means bavon avos, the children will not die for the sins of their fathers. Is harei kvar nemar, the pasuk says ish bechetu yumasu, that a person will only die for his own sins. So I don't need this pasuk to teach me that he won't die for the sins of his father or for his son. Ella lo yumsav esal banim is a reference to edus, the edus banim, that if the banim testify against their father, then the father will not be condemned to death based on the testimony of his children.
It says it's implied that this edus is only an issue in dinin nefoshes, not dinin mamonos.
Excellent question. Okay, we'll get to that soon. Hold on to your question. So again, so let's start with Lo Yumsu Avos Al Banim, the banim apostle to testify on behalf of their fathers. And that's called Edus Banim. Then the pasuk says Ubanim Lo Yumsal Avos. That's already Edus Avos, and the father cannot testify against his son or for his son. And it goes either way. Okay. Yesh Lahakshos. Okay, I want to share with you a kasha here of the Achronim. Maduat Sark Drosha Gamsha Avos Psulim Libnehem Vagamsha Bonim Psulim Li Avos. We were discussing earlier, if you remember, that when there's a psul kurva, then it goes both ways. And if, let's say, for example, we gave the case where a nephew cannot testify against his maternal uncle, so the maternal uncle can't testify against his sister's son.
Right.
And it reflects back and forth. And we said that even if it's Eino Royal Yarsha. So why did the Torah have to specify in two directions that the Avos will not die because of the testimony of their sons, and vice versa, the sons will not be condemned based on the testimony of their fathers? Hayadai lonu b'pasuk echad l'lamdenu shepsulim. So here's the answer that they offer. Kevan shedin ze nogeh gam ledin nefashos ubedin nefashos adinu she'ein on shemikoach kal v'chomer obameh motzinu im eino mefureshes batorah l'chein hutzach hakosav l'farish eshneim psulim. In other words, when it comes to edus, and especially in the case of a capital crime, then we don't apply the logic of a kal v'chomer or any other kind of a logic. So although in general you may say that the psuli edus should go in both directions, but we're not sure, unless we have a pasuk, and it's explicit, that the psul goes in two directions. Because when it comes to certain areas of law, we don't apply the logic of a kal v'chomer. But now Rabbosai, we have another kasha. Hikshu hachronim harei b'navi nemar b'mefurosh Shekavanas hakosuv kipshuto. So what's the case? There's a fellow, I point my finger here, named Amatzia, that's right around the corner here. He was Melech Yehuda. Shaharag es avodav shaharagu es aviv Yoash. So Amatzia is the son of Yoash. And Yoash, his father was murdered. And when Amatzia became the king of Yehuda to avenge his father's death, Harag es avodav, he killed those servants who were responsible for the death of his father. And the pasuk says in Sefer Melachim Beis, it says, "V'es b'nei hamakim lohimis," but he did not put to death the children of the murderers. And then it says, "Kakosu b'sefer Toras Moshe." Interesting. You very rarely find a pshat in the pasuk of Chumash based on the Novi, but that's what we have over here, because it says Kakosu b'toras Moshe Asher tziva Hashem lema lo yumsu avos al banim ubanim lo yumsu al avos ki ish b'cheto yumas. Mind-boggling that the pasuk in Tanakh reiterates word for word the pasuk in Chumash, and it comes to prove why it is that Yoash, although he was murdered and his son Amatzi wanted to avenge his murder, but nevertheless he would not kill the children of those Avodim that put Yoash, that murdered Yoash.
Why would you think yes? They're not Amalek.
Wait, Jerry, you're a step ahead of me. Hold on to your question for just a minute. You're asking a bunch of brilliant questions today, but let me just get the techniques. What is bothering us right now? The pshat in the pasuk lo yumsav asalbanim should be taken literally. It has nothing to do with Eidus. It has to do with the fact that you don't put someone to death because of the iniquities, the sins of his father. That's what the pasuk's talking about. Now you ask me, how do I know that? The answer is, it says it explicitly in Malachim. So the Rad asks this question. He says the following: pasuk echad nidrash lekama ta'amin. Wow, that's interesting. In other words, we can take a pasuk and we can interpret it in many different ways. Now, I'm a little perplexed here because the Gemara itself says, I know this conclusion that children should not be suffering because of the father's sins, because it says, ish becheto yumasu. Why didn't the Gemara just quote this pasuk in Malachim Beis that on the contrary that we have to, right, we have to know that you don't kill the children because of the sins of their fathers, and we know that from this pasuk of Lo Yumsu Avos Al Banim. The Navi is referring to the end of the pasuk, ish becheto yumsu, but tchilas haposuk is referring to Eidus. So in other words, if you put the two together, the Gemara's answer here together with the pasuk in Malachim, then the pasuk in Malachim is just reiterating what it says and what we derive from ish becheto yumas. Once we get that derivation and that conclusion from ish becheto yumas, then we have to ask ourselves the question, so why did the Torah have to tell me lo yumsu avos al banim, and it must be for Eidus? V'hosif aran levar, he adds, shebemes ein tzarech pasuk lomar shevedini shamayim lo manishim es ha'avon, ki zev vaday shem hika ben o kilel es avish lo yonish ha'av al avar ha'ben el ha'pasuk bal lomar lemoshel shelo yale el libo lishpo chamos al ha'ben v'avon ha'av kimo b'maisa v'amatsya. So Jerry, I think the Ron is addressing your question. I'm not sure if he answers it in a way that you'll be satisfied. It's not a head-on answer, but it's sort of akif, and he answers your question. He says that you're right. On a level of pure justice in front of the Almighty in the heavenly courts, there would be no logic, there would be no havamina that a father should suffer because of his son's sins and he should be punished, or the other way around. But when it comes to human avenging of a crime, then sometimes he calls it a moshel, like a leader, will entertain the possibility that we should wipe out the whole family, you know, because of one terrible sin of the father, or the other way around. And that's called, in the language of the Ran, that's called lishpo chamoso ala ben biavon ha'av. You know, and I'm thinking that maybe the answer to your question, Jerry, would be the following. Have you ever heard of the phrase, a sin of passion, a crime of passion? Are you familiar with that? It comes actually from the French. And what it means is that if you for example, catch your wife in an uncompromising position and you kill the boel, then I don't know exactly what the law is, but it's a crime of passion, and it could be a mitigating circumstance. So it could be that in the context of meeting out vengeance, you know, I want to avenge the death of my father because somebody put him to death, somebody murdered him, so I might destroy the whole family. That doesn't mean I'm allowed to do so, but it could be that it's a mitigating circumstance. And that's what the Torah wants to come lafuke. Again, that's not really the pshat now of Pasuk, because the Pasuk says ish b'cheto yumsu. So we know that that Beis Din will not punish someone for the crimes of somebody else, or one of, you know, his father for the son, and vice versa. So that we know. But the Pasuk in Malachim, which is addressing the case of Amatzia, and Amatzia is now avenging the death of his father Yoash, there you might have a Havavina that Amatzia would as a leader would have the rights to, you know, sort of like vengeance here means, you know, to have a public statement that will have a ripple effect on the whole society, that he might be tempted to destroy the family. And that's what the Pasuk says, and the Navi tells Amatzia, "As bnei Amakim lo yom, he shouldn't kill the bnei Amakim because kasuv b'Torah b'sefer Torah Moshe lo yom so'avas al bonin." Now the Gemara has a different drasha, a different take on this pasuk, lo yumsu avos al bonin. The Gemara says the following: Ubonin bavon avos lo. Is it true that the children are not punished for the sins of their fathers, which is the way you interpret the pasuk ish b'cheto yumsu? V'aksiv, we have a pasuk in Kitisa, it says that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai with the second set of luchos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, revealed to him the 13 midos of rachamim, and one of them is poked avon avos al banim, which sounds like God meets out punishment to the children for the sins of their fathers. How do you reconcile that with ish b'cheto yumasu? So I would say that this piece of Gemara that we're learning now is a kind of agadic digression from the main subject. Our main subject is Eidus. But if we derive the conclusions about Eidus and the Psul Kurva from the Pasuk Lo Yumsu, and that's because it says Ish Becheto Yumas, so let's just pick up Ish Becheto Yumasu and see if we can make any sense out of it. How do we reconcile that with the Pasuk that says Poked Avon Avos Al Bonim? Hasam, says the Gemara, what is the pasuk poked avon avos referring to? Kisha ochazim b'maisa avoseyem b'yadeyem. They repeat their father's sins. Then God will punish them not only on their own sins, but also a little extra punishment because of the sins of their father. And I think what the Gemara has in mind here on a moral, on an ethical level, is that a child should learn not only what it's right to do from his father, he should learn also what it's wrong to do from his father. And that might be a general rule in ethics, that we should look at other people who are doing evil and we should learn what not to do. So in a sense, there's an extra element of responsibility here on the part of the son. If he's repeating the same sins as his father, not only is he guilty in and of himself because he made that decision to sin, but also he's guilty for having not learned the lesson of watching, you know, the ra of his father and learning what not to do. Now in Sefer Yoshua, just one second, there's a comment of the Ralbag. By the way, the Ralbag in English, if you don't know this, is called Gersonides. And one of the things he's famous for is that, I shouldn't say this out loud, but he seems to be denying one of the Yud Gimel Ikrei Adas, the Ralbag. And we don't know exactly how to reinterpret the Ralbag. And that has to do with the whole question of what's called anthropomorphism, you know, whether God has a body or not. It's a big to-do in the history of Jewish philosophy, of Jewish thought. But the Ralbag was an original thinker. So in Yoshua, in Sefer Yoshua, he writes the following, the Ralbag. Adam ha-maschil lachto, when a person begins to sin, hamida ha-ra lo nikba bo, at this point in the beginning of his career as a sinner, he still is basically a good guy. He hasn't changed his very midos, his very essential attributes. V'day ba'onish mu'at. And all you need is a light punishment, k'day lachziro lemutav, to get him back on the straight line. Aval k'shechoti b'chete avosav. Unfortunately, if he repeats the sins of his father, becomes part of his spiritual genetic code, nikbaslo hamida p'chusa zot b'chozek. Now that mida, that low mida, becomes embedded in his very essence, his very personality. Tzarech onesh gadol, and now he needs a very profound punishment, kidei lemono milcheto, or I would have said kidei lenakoso, meaning maybe to clean him. You know what I mean? To purge him of that evil that's now very deeply embedded in his spiritual psyche. Correct. So that's the understanding of the Ralbag as to why a person who follows in the evil paths of his father needs a double punishment, so to speak, because that extra punishment is necessary to remove the evil, the bad attributes that are now become almost essential to his personality. However, the Ibn Ezra writes something totally different. And he writes, Ein chote nena shal chatov shal aviv, no safa ma shechata hu. He says, heaven forbid to say that we're going to add a punishment to the son because of the iniquities of the father. El kavonis haposuk, she'ein Hashem marich lo apo al chatov, that God will not give him what's called a richas af, meaning let's be patient and see, maybe he made a mistake and he intentionally fell prey, this and that, but tomorrow he'll get back on the right track, so God is very patient. Shatam shen enoshim gamal avon omos hu mishum shashem eno manish sa'odim shem yoshev b'tshuva. We think him avol kasher hevi ben. If he was brought up in this atmosphere of evil, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Marich Apo Elo Ma'abdo Manisho Miyad, so Hashem is not going to grant him Arichas Af, because there's no divine anticipation of tshuva in the case where he continues in his father's footsteps. Kidasanya, we learned in a Braisa. And this is the Tochacha of Parashas Bechukosa at the end of Chumash VaYikra. It says, I'll read the whole pasuk: Vanisharim b'chem yimaku b'avonam bi'artzos oyveihem v'af b'avonas avosam itam yimaku. You know, as God is telling the children that they will be punished in exile also for the iniquities of their fathers. So the Gemara thinks that according to this price of, we're talking about Kisha Ochsim Maisa Avoseim Biyadeim, and that's why Hashem is going to mete out punishment to the children for the avon of their avos, because the children are Ochsim B'Maisa Avoseim Biyadeim. Ata Omer, are you absolutely convinced that that's so? That's Kisha Ochazin. That's only because the children are imitating their father. Oh, eino perhaps, el k'she'ein ochazin. It could be that we're talking about even a case where the children are not imitating their fathers, they're original sinners, and they're still going to be punished for their father's sins. So the Braisa answers, k'shu omer ish b'cheto yumasu. From this pasuk itself, we can conclude that a person is not punished for someone else's sins, and therefore we have a sosrin apsukim zelazeh. Why do we have a stira? Because on the one end it says v'af avonus avosam itam yimako. On the other end it says ish b'cheto yumas. So how do we reconcile this stira? It must be kishaochazin ba'isavosem b'yadehen. That under what circumstances does the pasukim b'chukosai say that afavonos avosim imaku? That's when the children are following in the footsteps, the evil footsteps of their father. But ish b'chato yumasu means when the children are not imitating their father. The Gemara says, "V'lo, are you telling me that the son is not going to be punished for the avon of his father, or vice versa?" V'aksiv in the Tochacha in Parashas B'chukosai at the end of Chumash Vayikra, it says, "V'kashlu ish be'achiv," which means that when we run away from our enemies, one Jew is going to trip over the other Jew. And the Chachamim Darshan the Achiv, it means Bishvil Achiv, which means that he will be Nichshal because of the sins of his brother, which means that Ish Bavon Achiv, that a person will be punished because of the sin of his brother. And his brother here is not to be taken literally, it means of one of his fellow Jews. This is the source for what we call arvus, that each person is responsible for another Jew and to make sure that his friend is observing the mitzvahs. And if his friend is violating a mitzvah, he's responsible for that because he didn't do his job of arvus and he wasn't careful about being shomer his brother, meaning his fellow Jew. Anyway, we see from here that it's very possible that a person will be punished for the sin of somebody else. So how do you derive from the pasuk ish b'chato yumasa that no one will be punished for the sins of another? Hasam, says the Gemara. What the Gemara darshan's there, and a person would be punished for the sin of his friend, shahaya b'yada limchos v'lo micho. It's only in a case where he saw his friend violating a sin, he should have intervened, he should have protested and given him a good shtak musa shmuz, velo micho, and he did nothing. He sat by idly. And he minded his own business. You know, if my colleague is violating the Torah, that's his problem. It's not my problem. So that undermines arrogance. And in such a case, we assume that he could have done something to straighten out his friend and put him on the right path, and he didn't do so, and failing to do so, he will be punished. And now we're on Daf Chav Ches Amud Aleph. The Gemara before had said that when it says Lo Yumsu Avos Al Bonim, it's talking about Shnei Avos Shehem Achim Zela Ze Ubneihem. In other words, we're now going to derive the psul of cousins, meaning these two brothers. Just one second. What's the case now? There are two achim, zelazet ubneim. Oh, right. And the children of these two brothers are posel, and they're posel oid. So the Gemara tries to clarify what's the source for this halacha. Ashkechan avos lebanim, banim liavos. We see in the pasuk clearly that a father can't testify on his son and vice versa. The koshkein avos adadi. And how much more so, the avos, meaning the achim, cannot testify one against the other. So two brothers are pasul lahayit. But banim lebanim minayin, how do you know that the children of these two brothers are pasul lahayit zelze, meaning the cousins are not allowed to testify one against the other? So the Gemara answers, Im Kain, because if we're going to say that B'nei Achim are not psulim, then Lichtov Kra, the Torah could have said, Lo Yumsu Avos Al Ben. In other words, instead of using Bonim in a plural, it could have said Al Ben in a language of a Yachid, of an individual. And that would have meant that each one of the brothers is possible to testify against his brother. But my bonim, why does it go out of its way to use the plural? There must be an extra ribui here. Instead of ben bonim, dafilu bonim la dodi. Even the bnei ha'achim are psulim to testify one against the other. And now the Gemara is going to go on and try to find the source for each one of the categories of the psulim. And that will pick up in Mishnah next week. I wanted to spend a few minutes with you on the Gemara that we learned back on Daf Chavav, because I don't think we did an adequate job here in finishing up a Rashi on Daf Chavav Amid Beis, and it's a very, very important Rashi, and frankly I missed it. So if you don't mind, because we still officially have a few more minutes, let's backtrack a little, because this is a very important, we've been learning for a long time now about psulei edus, and we assume that a rasha is pasul lahayid, and what makes him into a rasha? He violates a law of the Torah deliberately. However, we never really touched on the following question: what happens in the case of someone who violates an Isur Derabbanan? Now, why do I mention this? Because when you violate an Isur Doraisa, are you Pasul Yedus? It depends. If you get Malkus for that lav, then you're Pasul Yedus. If you don't get Malkus, you're not Pasul Yedus. Not every lav will generate a psul rasha, and this is all codified in the Ram Hilchos Eidus and in the Shulchan Aruch Siman Lamed Daled and Choshei Mishpat, that we're talking about a lav that generates malchus. Oh. Now, what about in a violation of an Isur Derabbanan? If you're talking about Chamas, let's say we talk about Chamsonim and Malvi Beribis and Mesachki Bekubia and Mafrichi, all those. So that already is a psul doraisa, perhaps, because of Chash Sheker, meaning he's a Rosh of the Chamas, or even if it's not a psul doraisa. Right, it might be sheker, but whatever it is, it's a psul because of sheker, of a chashash sheker. But on a doraisa level, forget about chashash sheker, we paskin like Rav Sheshes, like Abaye, that any avera, even an ochel devela, mumel ochel devela slehachis, is posul yedus, meaning there's a separate category of a rasha. Oh, so now, we have to ask ourselves the following question. Is there a separate category of a rasha derabbanan, which would generate a psul edus derabbanan? And if you say yes, then does the same precondition that applies to a psul rasha derais apply to a psul for violating an isur derabbanan? What condition do I have in mind? Malchus, meaning just like in a doraisa, the psul rosh, I'm not talking about rosh of the chamos, would be dependent upon malchus. So let's say, for example, if he digs graves on yontif, then he's chayiv malchus, therefore he's posul as a rosha. Or for example, if he would be bala erva, or he eats nevela, in all these cases he gets malchus, and therefore he's posul b'toras rosha. So what kind of rishus, what kind of violation passes you to edus that's only a violation that of a law that generates malchus? What about in the case of a violation of an isur derabbanan, when the rabbanan are going to call you a rasha, and you passel edus min rabbanan, is there a category called a psul rasha, which has nothing to do with chamas, simply because of the avera, in this case an avera derabbanan? And number two, if there is such a thing, does it have the same limitation, the same requirement that it's got to generate malchus? Now, what do you mean malchus? We're talking about an isur derabbanan, that's called what? Malchus maridus. So here there's a gigantic chiddush in Rashi, which I missed, and has tremendous repercussions in halacha, and it's on Chavav Amid Beis, And you'll see it in Rashi, Dibra Maschil, where is it? Just give me a second. Arboim Bekatfe. So let's count about 10 lines up from the bottom of the Amud. And you'll see a Rashi, Dibra Maschil, Arboim Bekatfe. Now, let's put this Rashi into perspective. There's Machlokas in the Gemara, as we've mentioned more than once, between Rav Sheshes and Rav Nachman. The case is Chashud Al Harayos. Rav Nachman says that Chashud Al Harayos is Kosher Liedus. And Rashi explains the reason for that is because we need a Rosh HaDechamos. And in this case, in Arayas, that's not called a Rosh HaDechamos. And the Achronim will identify Rav Nachman with the Shita of Rava. Rava meaning on Chav Zion, that Rava says only a Rosh HaDechamos is possible. And therefore, according to Rava, a Mumar Ochel Nevelis Lechachis is Kosher Liedus. So that's okay. That's Rav Nachman. Rav Sheshes rejects Rav Nachman. He says, Arboim Bekatvei V'Kosher. He's getting Malchus. And you're telling me he's Kosher. So one way of learning this Gemara before we see Rashi is that we're talking on a Doraisa level of a Psul Rasha. And Rav Sheshes holds his Psul Rasha even if he's not a Rasha de Chamas. So he gets Malchus for Bal Arayos. And therefore, he's Pasulietus. But Rashi is going to reject that pshat. We can't be talking on a Doraisa level. And that for two reasons. Reason number one is because we're not talking about a Baal Ha'erva, but rather a Choshet Al Arayos. Which means that he hangs around the women, he locks himself up in a room with a woman, and he violates the Isa Yichud. He's Choshet Al Arayos. So you can't tell me that he's possible to arise in Torah's Rasha for violating what? An Issa Yichud? An Issa Yichud is a very serious Issa, but it's not a Doraisa. The Torah says, Isha, blah, 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 lo segal ervasa, but he's not involved in Gili Erva. And secondly, says Rashi, there's another reason we can't be talking in Rav Sheshes' context about a Psul Rasha Doraisa because the Avera of Erva. And that is that he never had Asra. And how do I know he didn't have Asra? Because it says he's Choshed Al Arayos. Choshed Al Arayos means we suspect him of Arayos. If there was Edom Asra and he violated Asra, then you don't have to call him a Choshed Al Arayos. So therefore Rashi insists that Rav Sheshes, when he says Arboim Yakedo, meaning we do have a condition that a Rosh who's Posliatus has to be someone who's Chayav Malkus, but Rashi says Chayav Malkus Afal Pisha Ein Shom Asra. Now Rashi, I'm saying this just for pedagogical purposes, what I'm about to say is totally wrong, but Rashi is contradicting himself, because on the one hand Rashi says that there was no Asra. On the other hand, Rashi says he gets Malchus. Rashi has to say he gets Malchus because it says Arboim Bekatfe. And not only that, Rashi holds that you can only be Pasul Yehus if you get Malchus for violating a law. So Rashi has to tell us that he gets Malchus. But then Rashi in the same breath says that he didn't have Asra. And we know that without Asra you don't get Malchus. Do you hear the Kasha? I mean, again, there's no Kasha. I'm just trying to learn Taich in the Rashi. So Rashi says, you know what we're talking about? There was no Asra, but what? The Omar Mar, he quotes the Gemara in Kedushin, Malkin al lo tova shmua. And the Gemara there is talking about Yichud, that a man was alone with a woman in a private room, and he locks the door. And the rumor goes out that what happened inside there, right? So again, we don't have Eidim, we don't have Asra, but he violated Issur Yichud, and there's a Shmuel Lo Tova, and the Gemara says Malkin, then he gets Malkus. Now what kind of Malkus are you getting for a Shmuel Lo Tova?
Malkus
Maridus. So I derive from this Rashi at least two, maybe three conclusions. Let's see, I'm going to work out the number in a minute. Number one, I derive from Rashi that there's such a thing as a Rasha Derabban, and again, not a Rosh Dechamas. Rosh Dechamas, you don't need Berzon for that, because it's all over the Mishnahis that we've been discussing. But that just like on a Doraisa level, if you hold like Rav Sheshes and like Abaye, there's a Psul Rosho, which is Eino Shel Chamas. And now Rashi takes that Psul Rosho, Eino Shel Chamas, and he applies it to a Derabbanan, which means that Derabbanan he's going to be Psul because he violates a Lav Derabbanan, Issa Derabbanan, which has nothing to do with Chamas. That's Chiddush number one. But here I want to add Chiddush number two. And that is that Rashi holds that even with regard to a violation of a Derabbanan, to generate a Psul Rosh a Derabbanan, we need a condition that has to be met. And what is that condition?
Hasra.
And why do we need a condition of Hasra? Because of Malkus. Do you follow? Just like in a violation of an Issa D'Oraisa, there's a condition. When does that violation generate a Psul Rasha? That's only if it has Malkus. So too, in a violation of a Derabbanan for Psul Eidus Derabbanan B'Toras Rasha, you need Malkus. So that's exactly what Rav Sheshes, according to Rashi, was pointing out over here. That guess what? The Chashad Al Arayos, who violated an Issa D'Rabbanan of Yichud, is going to get Malkus
without Hasra.
And now we have a third Chiddush, right? So wait a minute, let me just calculate. Am I ready for the third Chiddush? Let's see. So the first Chiddush is that just like there's a Psul Rosha D'Oraisa independent or regardless of Chamas, so too there's a Psul Rosha D'Rabbanon, that's called Chashad Al Arayos. And it's a Rasha, and he's a Rasha Psul Yedus Midrabbanan because he violated an Issa D'Rabbanan. That's Chiddush number one. Chiddush number two is that you need Malkus. Just like on a Doraisa level, you're only Chayef for violating you're only Psul Yedus as a Rasha because you violated a Lav Sheish Bo Malkus. So too on a D'Rabbanan level, you're only Psul Yedus Midrabbanan as a Rasha because you violated an Issa Sheish Bo Malkus. Oh, now we're ready for the third Chiddush, Asher. That what? That you don't need Asra, right? Because again, Rashi is insisting that there was no Asra. So it means that on a Derabbanan level, he's going to be Chayev Malkus without Asra, and he's now Psul Yedus as a Rosh Derabbanan. Now, how can you be Chayev Malkus without Asra? So I think the answer lies that the Tzvei Dinim and Asra. There are two dimensions to Asra. One dimension to Asra is just to clarify that he's amazed. Because maybe he's a shogeg, he doesn't know the law. And then there's another halacha that Hasra upgrades the Avera. So for example, the Rambam paskins that even a Talmud Chacham needs Hasra. And the Rambam asks himself to follow the obvious question, what do you mean? He's a Talmud Chacham, he knows the law. I don't have to tell him that you can't be Mechal Shabbos. So why do I need Hasra in the case of a Talmud Chacham? And the answer is because we need a different kind of amazed. We need amazed, not just be a Dias Avera, but you even need a mazid who violates the Avera immediately after the Hasra. That upgrades the Kesef Mishnah calls him a mazid gomur. He's an Eresh class mazid. Oh, so comes along Rashi, and Rashi says that requirement of an upgraded Hasra, meaning an upgraded Avera, where he violates the Avera after the Hasra, and that's above and beyond Yediyas HaIsur, that doesn't apply to a Derabbanan. When it comes to an Issa Derabbanan, then he becomes a Rasha for violating the Issa Derabbanan, as long as we know that he was a Yodeyas HaIsur, so he was amazed, and he doesn't have to be amazed Gomer. So this is a fascinating Chiddush, that even in the absence of Asra, and when I say the absence of Asra, I don't mean, did he know about the Issur? Did he not know about the Issur? He was well aware of the Issur. And he deliberately violated that Avera. But do we need another requirement up on top? And that's called Asra, which makes his Mezid into a different kind of a Mezid, that makes him into a Rosh Hashem Psul Yedus. And the barometer for this is whether or not he's Chayav Malkus, because the Torah says we're only going to give him Malkus if he violated an Avera with Asra. What kind of Asra? Asra for a Talmud Chacham, you follow what I mean? Asra that goes beyond Yediyas HaAveira and makes him into a Mezid Gamur, and then he gets Malkus, and then he becomes a Psul Rasha. That's only Bamedvar Murm Legabe, a Psul Rasha Doraisa for violating a law of the Torah. But if he violates an Issa Drabbanon, Rashi says, then he's going to get Malkus even without Asra, it'll be Psul Yedis Midrabbanon. And that's what Rav Sheshes has in mind. So when we read Rav Sheshes without Rashi, we think that Rav Sheshes is talking about a Psul Rasha Doraisa. Why? Because he's a Baal Arayas. And any Aver in the Torah will generate a Psul Rasha, even though it's not a Rasha Dechama. So he gets no monetary benefit from it. No. Rashi says that can't be Rav Sheshes. Why? Because he's Chashed Arayas, which means he was in violation of the Isur Yichud. He did not... There's no Edom and Asra here that would testify that he was Bala Erva. So why is he possibly Edus Akrashi? He's possibly Edus Midrabbanon. And why is he possibly Edus Drabbanon? Because he violated Isa Yichud. And not only that, Rashi tells me that when you violate Isa Yichud, you can get Malkus on a Drabbanon level, and that's because of Malkin al Shmur Shalot Tova, and that makes you into a Rasha. I don't know if he was Mason. The answer is we know he was Mason. But he didn't have Asra to jack him up to the level of what? Of Amazed Gomor. And in Drabbanon, Rashi says that you don't need Amazed Gomor. That's only a precondition on Doraisis. All right, Rabbi Osei, we'll stop here. All right? Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos, Parshas Vaera. And we should be Zochem Yitz Hashem to the Tzesi, V'galti, V'lakachti, and V'Ivesi, of course, you know, is the fifth course. If you have any Chabadnikim here, you know what I mean.
Always have an extra close. Thank you.